This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Dorothea Lange is best known for her portraiture photography documenting America's Great Depression. Her image, Migrant Mother, which depicts a destitute woman in a camp in California, has become one of the most recognized photographic portrayals of the era. When Dorothea passed away in the 1960s, her granddaughter inherited one of her beloved cameras and began to follow in her footsteps. But she soon realized that she could never fill her grandmother's shoes, so she turned to filmmaking instead. Diana Taylor is now an Emmy Award-winning documentarian, and three of her films screened this week at NC State University's Gregg Museum. The film Agnes Martin with My Back to the World shows tonight at 6. Diana Taylor joins me in the studio now. Welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. Great to be here.
Tell us more about how you got started doing documentary work. Your grandmother was a big influence for you.
Yeah, and you know, I want to say one thing is that the film tonight, Agnes Martin with My Back to the World, I was the cinematographer on that. And so it's actually Mary Lance's film, and I just wanted to be clear about
sure.
that for her, for people who know that film, because many people do.
More about your grandmother's yeah. influence on your career.
Well, clearly, I grew up looking at her photographs. They were in every drawer and on every wall in the house. And that was a powerful, unconscious way in which I began to understand photography and understand how we capture images, and a very classical way of understanding that. And I went on to do social issue documentaries. I mean, I clearly found my way in that way. My first film, which I did when I was 19, was looking at disabled camping experience for kids and adults, disabled kids and adults. And that brought me into the world of looking at other people's situations. And I went on from there making films about social issue, environmental issues.
But at yeah. one point you had considered becoming a photographer?
Oh, yes. I thought I was going to be a photographer. I went to UC Santa Cruz. I was going to major in photography. I was all set to be a photographer, and it was far too difficult to stand in her shoes. And I compared myself to her every
was
second.
That was the problem. So in other words, you really couldn't imagine yourself as not her granddaughter and with a career in photography.
Well, every time I looked at my work, I could yeah. see that it couldn't even come close to hers. And so I realized that I had to get out of it. It was I got very, very upset about the fact that I couldn't match her work. But I had a gift. I clearly had a gift, but it was not that one.
And it was filmmaking. And as you yeah. said, you got involved in social issues initially, and then eventually turned the camera on the story of your grandmother.
I did. It took me many years to be ready to make that
now
film.
Tell us about that. What do you mean? What do you mean?
I wasn't ready. My memories of my grandmother, who was charismatic and dynamic and beautiful and interesting, were also complicated by her power, and in some ways she was very, I had conflicting feelings about her, and my memories of her were challenging. And so I realized that I wasn't ready to make the film until I could absolutely stand back and give her a more global look than just my young emotional memories of her. And so I waited quite a number of years. And then it took me 11 years to make it.
Some of that conflict around the fact that she was a great artist, but not necessarily grandmotherly in a way.
Not at all grandmotherly. Yeah. In fact, she wasn't warm and fuzzy.
Yeah.
And I valued that, though, on some level, because she really helped me see the power of being committed to a career, being committed to what you believe in. But at the same time, it was hard to, you always wanted to be in her shining light. And
well, tell us a little bit about her process. I want to hear a clip now where she, in fact,
oh, good.
Maybe we should listen to the clip and
yeah,
you can help unpack
absolutely.
It for us. This is from the film Dorothea Lange, Grab a Hunk of Lightning, and it features a lot of archival tape from your grandmother. Let's listen to this clip now.
When I said I am trying to get lost again, I really expressed a very critical point of departure. That frame of mind that you need to make fine pictures of a very wonderful subject. You cannot do it by not being lost yourself. I am trying to get lost again.
There's a clip from the documentary Dorothea Lange, Grab a Hunk of Lightning. And I'm here with filmmaker Diana Taylor, who is Dorothea Lange's granddaughter. Three of Diana's films screened this week at NC State's Gregg Museum, or at least films that she has either made or been associated with. Tell us more about that journey. What does she mean, lost again, and what part does that play in her process?
her capacity to embed herself, we use that term now, I don't think she would have used it then, but to embed herself and her being into a difficult social situation and abandon who she was in order to see more clearly what was in front of her was her one of her great gifts. And she called it getting lost. And she also called it annihilating herself, yeah, and annihilating the ego in order to step into a difficult situation. And she did that in a very interesting way because she was a very petite woman. She had polio when she was young. And she was not an imposing figure, but clearly she had to get lost.
That played a part. You talked about polio and the fact and how her family asked her to deal with that. Mm-hmm. I understand played an important part in her decision to get a career and yeah, express herself. Tell
yes
us more.
Well, her mother and grandmother both, in many ways, tried to hide her polio. And they said to her, walk as well as you can, you know, hide. They put her in skirts and tried to get her to hide her limp. And she ended up learning to live with her limp and actually using it to her advantage in the field, which was really interesting.
This is this business again of annihilating yourself, getting out of the way,
yeah,
and sort of becoming a little closer to becoming one in some ways with the subject. You also, she had a very distinct eye, and you had an experience with her in which she really sort of brought you up, trained you in that idea. Tell us that story.
Yeah, she brought me up short a number of times. I can tell you, I was a very rambunctious and high energy grandchild. One always wanted to be in her shining light, and so one day I thought, okay, I'm going to collect a lot of. I noticed that she always observed things beautifully, and so I thought, well, I'll bring her some of these interesting rocks and shells and put them in my hand, and I held them out to her, and I said, Grandma, look at this. And I said, do you see it? And she said, I see it, but do you see it? Do you see them? Do you see what's in your hand? And I remember being crushed initially because I wanted her to say, oh, how lovely, that was so, look at what you picked up. And instead it was a demand, a command to look at the world and apprehend it differently. And I walked away demolished, but also really contemplated what she said, and that stayed with me my whole life.
I wondered about that. I mean, clearly you can understand how you would have felt in the moment, and I'm wondering when you came back to that and when the real message, what she was trying to put across to you, when that finally came home to you, if it did.
Oh, it came home to me then. I will say, yes, I was demolished, but I remember thinking there's something more that I need to get. In order to please her, yeah, I have to understand something deeper here. And I can't say that I've had one moment of it that's shown, but it's definitely imbued my work, for sure.
Well, we talked about her keen eye. I want to listen to another clip from the film that, again, here she is talking about her process and the way that eye works.
Not taking a few photographs while you're going down to the co-op. Or that it is a mental disengagement so that you live for maybe 2-3 hours as completely as possible a visual experience where you feel that you have lost yourself, your identity. You are only an observer.
Clip from the documentary Dorothea Lange, Grab a Hunk of Lightning. And I'm talking with filmmaker Diana Taylor, who is Dorothea Lange's granddaughter. Three of her films screened this week at NC State's Gregg Museum, and one of them is the one that we just played that clip from. So for you then to do this documentary, again, it must have been daunting in some ways.
I mean, completely daunting.
Talk about that.
Thank you, Frank. It was completely daunting.
Well, I can almost imagine, because now here she is telling you have to lose yourself, you have to be only an observer, and now you're going to try to tell this, you've got this camera crew, for goodness sake.
Right,
well, how did you, and I understand that you're very intentional about sort of applying that lesson to this documentary.
I applied it by not using editorial gimmicks or anything that was flashy in terms of the editorial process. I wanted to keep it a very classical look. But I also had to approach it. I had to step back myself further back and observe more but say less and let her say what she could say out of this beautiful footage that was done in the 60s of her, which I found, these outtakes that I found in a garage in Marin County. Quite spectacular story of that, restoring that footage. So I think that, I wanted to introduce the notion of my grandfather's influence and that how muses work together. They were certainly muses for each other, a creative collaboration that was very compelling. And so the, for me, it was to observe and then step back, to communicate and step back, communicate and step back with the film.
Well, I want to hear more about that archive in a second, but tell us more about your grandfather and his role in all this.
Paul Schuster Taylor, was an economist at the time. When they met, they were both married to other people, and they realized that their gifts... She is a photographer, and he is an economist in the field who believed in documenting. He was one of the first economists who felt he should document and send back photos from the field, not sit behind a desk and do statistics. And that collaboration fit like a glove, and they abandoned both their previous marriages and fell in love, and they were married for 30 years and worked together.
And worked and worked and worked. And again, this brings us back to the family relationship, both tied to their careers, to their intellectual and artistic pursuits, less to their families. You're telling the story of Dorothea Lange. Certainly the artistic prowess and accomplishments of Dorothea Lange come through. How did you handle the question about her relationship with you and other family members, which, as you say, was not warm and fuzzy?
I backed off the most difficult parts, I'll be frank, because the film would have become highly emotional in that way. And when I started making the film, in fact, I was looking at that question very deeply. And I backed off it because their work and their contribution to our history and what he was doing in the field and what she was doing in the field was very important. However, I make it clear that there's tension all the way through, and that as I introduce family members, they talk about, my aunt says, I was terrified of her as a young woman, and my uncle talks about, we talk about my uncle hawking her camera as a young man. He was so furious with her. And so I'm able to present that without going too far.
Not going too far, and I think that would have obscured. It's a difficult. Yeah. I saw all of that, and as I imagined, sort of how you managed to both tell us the fact or signal that this was
not perfect,
certainly an issue. Yeah. How you kept that from obscuring the other story was, I think, pretty remarkable. So this archive now, you did come across stuff that had already been done. Tell us more about that.
So I knew that there had been some filming done. I was around that filming in the 60s. I was young. And what I discovered was that there was this cache of outtakes of hers shot by a man named Phil Green, beautiful black and white footage that had never been really restored. And the sound was separated from the footage, and I had to have the footage restored, transferred, and then found the sound and had to sync it up with no sync. I mean, it was just a huge journey. It took about a year to get that footage all in one place and to be able to use it. But there she was. She could tell her own story now. When I finally saw what we had, it was just a mine, a beautiful mine of material that where she could tell her own story.
Who was shooting that, and what was the purpose of it initially? Why
Phil Green was a teaching assistant of hers. He thought she was fantastic. He wanted to make a film about her. Ultimately, it became two short half-hour documentaries for KQED in San Francisco, but the outtakes were what was so rich.
So we talked about her work and her art and being able to really, you know, see in a whole new way. She's famous for her work, particularly in the way she portrays women. We talked about that very famous photograph from the migrant in the 1930s. I want to play another clip from the film now, and this is author Jan Gogans talking about the way she captures women of the time.
She could photograph a shanty, and what she was really photographing was the house that wasn't there. She could photograph a door frame, and what she was really photographing was the door that wasn't there. She could photograph the stovepipe, and what she was really photographing was the hearth that wasn't there. The reason, I would argue, that Lange saw this so clearly is that she faced a number of her own struggles as a mother. She was a working woman who was on the road. She probably felt she should have done a better job, but she was busy trying to change the world.
It's a clip from the documentary Dorothea Lange, Grab a Hunk of Lightning. And I'm talking with filmmaker Diana Taylor, who is Dorothea Lange's granddaughter, her film screening this week at North Carolina State's Gregg Museum. We've got information at our website, stateofthings.org. And we also have this famous photo, Migrant Mother. Tell us more about that photo.
That photo was taken in 1936. It was sort of a looking back over her shoulder moment. She was by herself traveling up the coast. She'd finished a long assignment. It was a rainy, muddy day. She drove past a sign that said Pea Pickers Camp. She turned around, went back into the camp, talked herself into going back. She was exhausted. and found this woman and photographed her, made seven images of her. And that photo became the iconic statement of the Depression, really. And Florence Thompson was the woman in the photo. We engaged her later as a family because she discovered the photo, her family discovered the photo and saw its uses. And at first was very upset that had been used and thought that she should have been paid for that image. Of course, Dorothea was not paid for the image either. And but ultimately came to terms with her fame through that. And in her last years was very ill and was able to raise money for her for her health care toward the end of her life because
fame,
of that.
Fame and the impact that had,
yeah,
sort of
huge.
Revealing what this story was. And here's your grandmother talking about that photograph.
I see it printed all over, prints that I haven't supplied. It isn't belong to me anymore. It belongs to the world. She, that one picture, belongs to the public, really.
Dorothea Lange, Grab a Hunk of Lightning. That's a clip from the film. I'm here with filmmaker Diana Taylor, who is Dorothea Lange's granddaughter. And, of course, that was a time, I mean, the 1930s, when I think there was a sort of an army of people who, and maybe a transition in our thinking about what it is we should be documenting. And so lots of people were going into the fields, into the mountains, trying to capture folklore, the faces of people who were suffering. Did she feel that she was part of we can look back now and see that it's a sort of a movement. Did she feel she was part of something?
She definitely felt she was part of a movement. She admired the other photographers who were out in the field. I mean, they were showing America to Americans. I mean, that was really what they were doing. And right toward the end of her life, she was trying to put together something called Project One, which was a look in the 60s in the same way. She was organizing photographers. She became too ill to see this through, but it was organizing photographers to go back out into the field. I think the closest she came to that was her involvement with the book The Family of Man, which some of us know that Edward Steichen put out.
Yeah, tell us more about that book.
That Edward Steichen put out a magnificent exhibition, and she was involved with that. She helped organize many of the photographers, and it was, interestingly, given our time right now, it was a response to our bombing of the Japanese, and that we are a united family, and so the book is called A Family of Man, and it looks at our humanity together as humans. It's a very important book for everyone to know and understand what he was trying to say, and we could use it again right now.
Well, tell us more about that, because there was a time when we could all come together around photographs like that and documentaries like Harvest of Shame and see ourselves as a family and find something common to us all in a time of division. I wonder if you're hopeful that in these days of siloed media and identity politics that we can get there again, and if art can play any part in that.
Art definitely plays a part, and I think it's time for us all to stand up and use our art to those ends. I think we have to push ahead towards our unification and not toward our fears. And of course, she photographed the Japanese internment, and that internment, taking Japanese American citizens and putting them in camps for 6 years, rounding up 120,000 people. She documented that very profoundly, and then was fired for doing it with too much human interest. I think that
we could
do that again very easily.
We could do it again, and you're doing a lot of films about artists. The film that screens tonight is Agnes Martin with My Back to the World. Tell us a bit about that.
Agnes Martin, a magnificent painter who died in 2004, who lived her last years in New Mexico, a really solitary, beautiful artist who understood creative inspiration and was willing to work with her back to the world, but could also speak to beauty, speak to inspiration, speak to, again, humanity, speak to innocence. And she wrote a great deal about those things, spoke about them, and in the film, it's just, it's a great journey to take. Great privilege to film her.
Emmy Award-winning filmmaker Diana Taylor is in town for screenings of three of her films at North Carolina State's Gregg Museum. Diana, thank you so much for talking
with us. Thank you, Frank.
You can see her film, Agnes Martin, with My Back to the World, at Thompson Hall on the NC State campus tonight at 6, and find out details at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the music of the indie folk group, Lou Ray. Stay tuned.